At some point, stock market excitement becomes a kind of crazy. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. We're starting with a new surge upward in the stock market. But the question of the day is whether this is driven by the company profit reports cascading out these days or if it's an overabundance of exuberance. The Dow right now is up 250 points, 1%, and is above 26,000 for the first time. The S&P 500 is up 0.6%, above 2,800 for the first time. All this after the S&P went up 22% last year. David Kelly is chief global strategist at J.P. Morgan Funds.
The company reports are good. A lot of companies are taking big write-downs for the money that they're going to lose from the tax reform, but then expecting good gains in future earnings, and that's helping push the market up. But at this stage, we estimate that the price-earnings ratio on the S&P 500 is 19 times, and the average over the last 25 years is 16 times. So we're now about 18% above average, and that makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable here. The markets may be a little bit too enthusiastic.
And we're January 16th here, year-to-date 4.2%. The question is that you have is trees don't grow to the sky.
Well, that's right. A lot of economists believe that these markets carefully calibrate all this information and take it in. I don't believe that's the case at all in the short run. I think markets get too exuberant and too fearful. In the long run, it evens out. But in the short run, when markets are high, it doesn't tell you when there's going to be a correction, but it does tell you that returns on U.S. stocks going forward over the next few years are going to be a lot less than they've been over the last few years. If you look overseas, investments are much closer to average valuations than they are here in the United States. So I think this is a great time to ask yourself, do you have enough money invested overseas? Because things are getting just a little bit frothy here at home.
All right. David Kelly at J.P. Morgan Funds. Thanks for this conversation.
Anytime.
General Electric just took a surprisingly large chunk of money that might have gone to investors to shore up its insurance business, especially long-term care insurance. It's taking more than $6 billion off the table, with $15 billion more to be set aside over the next few years. GE stock is down 2.4%. No, they still do have some insurance business, even after the financial crisis. Britain today is dealing with a corporate collapse akin to the Enron debacle. The UK version of the story involves a big government contractor called Carillion PLC, with its hands in a spectrum of services from construction to school lunches. The company unraveled, owing money to perhaps tens of thousands of subcontractors. The BBC's Jonty Bloom in London has the tale of a collapse being felt by real people.
Carillion is the second largest construction company in the United Kingdom. It was also responsible for a lot of public services. So it had won contracts to feed prisoners, feed students at schools, run and clean hospitals and things like that, build new roads for the government. It employed 20,000 people directly and many more than that indirectly.
What happened to it?
It went bust in a quite spectacular manner. It seemed until about this time last year that it was a perfectly profitable company. It was worth something like $2 billion. And then all of a sudden, they didn't get paid for some contracts. It looks like they were claiming profits before they'd actually arrived at the company. They were desperately bidding for new contracts at a very cheap prices because they needed more money to come in. That caught up with them because they weren't making a profit. All of a sudden, one day, they looked at the balance sheet and they went, you know, we don't have any money.
Private sector company goes out of business. Why is this a political issue in Britain right now?
It has an awful lot of government contracts. So we are about to start building a new high-speed rail line from London to the north of the country. Carillion had part of that contract. Who's going to step in and pick that up? It was building a massive new hospital outside Liverpool in the north of England. Who's going to pick that business up? Who's going to cook the food for the schoolchildren? Who's going to cook the food for the prisoners? Who's going to clean those hospitals? All those contracts will have to be re-awarded. But also, part of the government's policy for the last 10, 20 years has not to do to employ civil servants to work in the prisons and so on, but to contract out to private companies. So it calls into question that kind of model of how to run your services.
The BBC's Jonty Bloom, thank you for this.
Thank you, David. A pleasure.
Shaving a haircut, two bits, as the ancient song went. How about shave, haircut, manapedi, wax? From San Francisco, KQED's Sam Harnett reports on men going to the beauty parlor.
Clifford Chu didn't used to spend a lot on a haircut.
So I used to get a really cheap haircut for like $8 to $10.
But then Chu got a new job and wanted something more. He started coming to Fellow Barber in San Francisco. Haircuts run $45 to $55. And unlike a salon, most of the clients are men.
Did you get to eat any cheesesteaks at least?
I did.
Was it worth it?
Nah.
Many new grooming establishments have nostalgic atmospheres. They harken back to barbershops of yore, those from time periods like the 1950s. Cue the Mad Men theme song. Other shops like the Fellow Barber chain have a turn of the 20th century aesthetic. This one has antique sinks and old topographical maps on the walls. Customers sit in front of mirrors built into a giant wooden fixture that takes up one whole side of the room.
It's from 1893, and it was at the Chicago World's Fair.
Jonah Buffa, whose brother started the chain, co-owns this shop.
It's solid mahogany. It's 9.5 feet tall.
And it has mermaids?
Yeah.
A classic throwback detail, says Sean Trainer, history professor at the University of Florida.
There's kind of like a winking, playful sense to the way in which a lot of these hipster shops sort of invoke manliness and masculinity.
The men I study describe these sorts of places as all men clubs.
That's sociology professor Kristen Barber. And yes, that's her real name. She's written a book called Styling Masculinity: Gender, Class, and Inequality in the Men's Grooming Industry.
It is certainly a shift in economics and a shift in gender relations that is pushing men to buy into a consumer masculinity in a way they haven't in the past.
But customer Clifford Chu says the expensive trim is just about looking good.
Like, man, I'm single. I should try to look better.
And with that sentiment in mind, these new barbershops offer plenty of pricey grooming products, just like women's salons. In San Francisco, I'm Sam Harnett for Marketplace.
Why not some hand and foot detailing? I'm David Brancaccio. This is from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.